I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Maryland is one of seven states holding primaries today. With 8 hours to go before the polls close, WIPR's Dominique Maria Bonessi reports from a polling station. Then we'll take a little break from politics for another installment of Tube Talk with Tube Talkers Jamila Krempel and Bridget Armstrong. Luke Cage on Netflix, Atlanta on FX, and The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu made a splash in their debut seasons. Have they continued to resonate? Plus, St. Francis Academy has emerged as a dominant high school football powerhouse in the Maryland Interscholastic Athletic Association. That's a good thing, right? Well, not if you're scheduled to play them. On the Afro Check-In, we'll talk about why so many local teams are running away from the Panthers. Midday, primary day, starts right after the news. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us on this primary day for Midday. We will have complete coverage of the results of today's election tonight at 9 o'clock with the WIPR news team. They'll be deployed throughout the region at various campaign headquarters. We'll also have analysis with Gene Marbella of the Baltimore Sun, John Willis of the University of Baltimore, and political strategist Catalina Byrd. And tomorrow, we will break down the results of the election with Jane Miller of WBAL Television and Andy Green of the Baltimore Sun. But today on Midday, a little break from politics. Coming up in just a minute, it's another installment of Tube Talk. But before we begin talking some tube, let's check in with Dominique Maria Bonessi of the WIPR news team. She's at a polling place in Baltimore on this primary day. Hey, Dominique, how you doing?
Good, Tom. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. So where are you at the moment?
I am currently at Roosevelt Recreational Center in Hamden. This is one of three polling sites that have had issues with scanners today. That includes Baltimore IT Academy and Ellerslie Apartments in Penn Lucie area.
And how long did the equipment problems last? And is voting now underway and okay, unfettered?
So at the Baltimore IT Academy, their polls did not open until 9 a.m. Scanners apparently were locked in a room that the volunteers did not have access to. So the ACLU is reporting that between 7 and 9 a.m., voters did not have access to the polls and they were turned away. Right now at the Roosevelt Recreational Center, the polling judges, the chief judge, I asked him multiple times to speak with me. He would not talk to me. I've called the Baltimore Board of Elections today. They also have refused, but they have not responded back to my calls. I asked some of the volunteers outside who are campaigning for other people. They say they've had 125 people come through here today, but the issues with the scanners was that the scanners were not working. There was some technical issue. I don't know if that's user error or actually machine error, but they have to store the ballots in an emergency box. So they're counting the ballots, but they are not scanning them through as they're being kind of given to the polling volunteers here.
But those scanning problems have been addressed now. People are voting without any problem at the moment, right? And have been voting without any problem from sometime this morning. We're not exactly sure when.
Yes, we're not exactly sure when. They said they did open on time, but the issue has just been that they haven't been able to scan all the votes. I did go in there just now, and they were scanning. The scanners were on, and people were scanning through their ballots. So they are counting them now. I just don't know how many hours they went without having those scanners working.
You were also at Holy Cross Church. It's over on West Street near Light Street in Baltimore. What did you find over there earlier today?
Right. So I was on Holy Cross. There they had one polling judge. Typically, there are two, one on the Republican side, one on the Democratic side. And the one on the Democratic side was there, said the one on the Republican side wasn't there. And she basically said she was concerned that it was lack of volunteers for many of the polling places, that they just don't have enough polling judges to go around. And that was a big concern of this particular polling judge.
We also were told even yesterday about a problem in Essex at the Essex Co-op Community Center, a polling place in Baltimore County. They knew yesterday it would be closed today because of they lack electricity. But those folks have been redirected to another polling place in that general vicinity. Of course, all of this happening in the context of the revelation just a few days ago about the problems that people had at the MVA. If you changed your address or changed your party affiliation at the Motor Vehicle Administration, either at a kiosk or on their website, but you did not have a transaction with the MVA. For example, you didn't purchase a driver's license or a registration or something like that, then your information did not get sent to the polling place, and it's possible that as many as 80,000 people will show up to polls today and not have their information at the polling place. That's a different issue than what you're talking about, but it sounds like there have been a few glitches here around Baltimore City, but that as far as we know now, as of noon or 10 afternoon, things are running fairly smoothly.
That's correct. We have a lot of places that had issues earlier in the morning, and it seems like they're running fine now. But we're going to keep an eye on it for the rest of the day.
Indeed, and we will check back in with you tonight at 9 o'clock when our election coverage begins for our special coverage tonight. So, Dominique Maria Benessi, thanks so much. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, Tom.
And now, as promised, another installment of Tube Talk. Our Tube Talkers are Bridget Armstrong and Jamila Krempel. They stay in the know about what's hot and what's not on TV. By day, they are mild-mannered producers. By night, they are protectors of the pop culture landscape. For hours, they toil, shrouded under duvets, their faces bathed in the magical glow of light emitting diodes. With remotes at the ready, a cup of tea in hand, and significant others ignored, forgotten, shunned, our tenacious Tube Talkers ingest hours and hours of television as a public service to bring us news and reviews of the good, the bad, and the utterly unpalatable. How's that for an intro, ladies? What do you think?
That was the best intro I've ever had.
Makes us sound like losers a little bit.
No, don't mean to make you sound like losers. I'll do the losing in this group here. You are the hipsters. I'm the loser around here. I'm not going to renounce that throne. But Bridget, welcome back to Midday. It's good to talk to you.
Great to be back.
And Jamila and Bridget, we should say, is joining us from the studios of Vox.com, where she's now a digital producer. And Jamila is here with me in Studio A. So let's talk, Bridget, first of all, about Luke Cage. This is on Netflix. Tell us what this story is about, what this show is about, and what you thought.
So the second season of Luke Cage just premiered over the weekend on Netflix. Like you said, Luke Cage is our Marvel hero, our bulletproof Marvel hero, bulletproof black man. This is the second season. Had a great first season, a really great reaction. This season, we meet new villains. There's an introduction of a villain called Bushmaster, who is Jamaican. And we find out that he has a backstory that's connected to the Stokes family. If you remember from first season, if you watched, the Stokes family was connected to some of our first season villains, some of which did not make it to the second season, some of which have become even more villainous in the second season. I think Alfre Woodard, who plays Mariah Dillard Stokes, another one of our kind of crime boss villains. She's not a super villain, but she's certainly a really scary character. I think she had a great performance. She was the standout for me this season. We also got to see Luke Cage reunite with his father. That's something that was not a part of the first season. We find out his father was a preacher. I thought there were some really good moments, and the actor who played him did a really great job. That actor unfortunately passed away. You may know him from Freddy on House of Cards. He played that role as well. I thought they had some really great scenes. Ultimately, I thought it was a good second season, worth the watch, but the character of Luke Cage kind of fell short for me, but the supporting characters really picked up the slack.
I mean, the fact that you have this black superhero series on Netflix, I mean, is this gaining steam? Did it acquire steam because of the popularity of Black Panther? Do you think the fact that those two things sort of coincided contemporaneously helped Luke Cage?
Well, I think that, the first season of Luke Cage did come out before Black Panther. And there's also another black superhero show on television radio on the CW called Black Lightning. And I think what it is really this response to people saying, we want to see heroes that look like us, heroes who share our experiences, heroes we can relate to. And I think these two shows and this movie are really a response to that call. And you also see that it makes money. It's popular because people want to see those images. They tune in. Black Panther had a huge, income. I think Black Lightning has had a really good first season. Luke Cage had a really good first and second season, as we saw that Netflix you know, renewed it, and we got this second season. So I think that's really just a response to people wanting to see these superheroes that they can relate to.
We are talking Tube here on Midday. Bridget Armstrong joins us from the studios of Vox.com. Jemila Krimple is with me here in Studio A. I'm Tom Hall. We'd love to hear your thoughts about Luke Cage and about any of the other things that you're watching this season. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @midday_WYPR. So, Jemila, as a general rule, because Bridget's talking about the second season of Luke Cage. I mean, if these series come out and they grab you in the first season, it can be really difficult sustaining it. It's one thing to establish a hit, but it's a whole other deal to keep it going and keep people watching.
Sure, absolutely. And also, you have to contend with, shows have to contend with competition. There's so much out there to watch on the different streaming services, on regular cable, on just there's TV shows everywhere. Even Facebook is doing original content now. So I think it's really more challenging than it used to be when it used to be, you know, the big networks, the few big networks. And, you know, that's where you would go for your comedies, your dramas, your everything. Now there's just, there's so much out there that it's really hard to keep attention.
And evidently, we have worked through the reality show syndrome. I mean, there are some reality shows, but for a while, it seems like everything was a reality show. Now, because the stories you're talking about, the shows you're talking about are produced, you know, fictional narratives. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are sets and costumes and lighting designers and music producers and actors and directors and showrunners. I mean, these are big deal productions. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. The amount of money people are investing is substantial.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's a good thing for people in your business. You're a screenwriter. I mean, it's good to have, you know, more possibilities. You know, but, you know, more possibilities, you know, is a good thing for everybody overall.
Sure.
And Bridget Armstrong, what's your understanding, for example, with these shows that center on African-American characters, whether they be superheroes or not, in terms of the kind of racial diversity we're seeing throughout the business, throughout the business of the production, of the editing, the lighting, the sound design, all that kind of stuff. I mean, do you have a sense that things are becoming more racially diverse in Hollywood and the other places that are producing this stuff?
Well, I think after the years following Oscar So White and some of the response to that got a lot of people thinking, and there were a lot of shows that got opportunities that didn't have them before, and we started to see more actors of color. Now, TV has always done a little bit better than movies as far as diversity, but I think what we're seeing is that when showrunners get the opportunity, showrunners of color get the opportunity to do shows, they are also giving opportunities to producers and writers and cinematographers who may have not had the connections before to get into the industry. I think that's kind of the effect. The more shows you see with predominantly people of color cast, with showrunners who are people of color, the more people in general, and this is not always, that you know are on the behind the scenes. One of the shows I think we're going to talk about a little bit later, Vida on Stars. The showrunner for that, Tanya Saracho, she is Mexican-American, and she made it her goal to employ Latinx writers, cinematographers, producers, and she did that even if it meant giving someone kind of their first opportunity on a big stage. She took that risk because that was something that was important to her, and I think you'll see that increased diversity as you have showrunners who decide to take that risk.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about Vida. This is on Stars, as Bridget mentioned, but Jemila, first of all, what's it about, and what was your take?
So Vida centers around, it's set in L.A., it centers around two sisters who are estranged, both in their relationship and location. One lives in Chicago, the other lives in the Bay Area, and they have to come back home because their mother dies. And their mother, Vida, the show is named after her. Her name was Vidalia. She owned a neighborhood watering hole. She owned this large property that had a bar at the bottom, and she had tenants above. She mostly rented to fellow Mexican Americans, is sort of the assumption. The bar has been struggling for years. It's underwater, almost literally underwater, because there's been plumbing issues. Like, the building is just in disarray. So these sisters have to come back home to not only bury and mourn their mother, but to figure out what to do with this property. My takeaway was, I feel like we've seen this storyline before. two siblings that are estranged and have to come home after a family tragedy, and they have to confront their tension, and all of these family secrets come out. We've seen that story before. We've seen some of these characters before, of the sort of the smart but really tight sister, you know, who's very uptight. And the more free-spirited, naive sister, and they're kind of battling the personality clashes. We've seen that before. We haven't seen it through the lens of an experience of Mexican-American women. We haven't seen Mexican-American women who are sexually fluid. Some of the characters identify as lesbians. Some others don't want to identify as anything. There's a character that says, "I don't identify as anything. I'm just me." We haven't seen this particular story, these particular characters. So I think it's worth watching for that. There are highs and lows about the story, about the show. One of my favorite things about the show is that I watched the entire season. I think it was six 30-minute episodes. I watched it with my phone in my hand because it's they speak in English, but there's lots of Spanish phrases, expressions. So I had my phone with Google up in my hand the entire time because I'm like, what does this mean? You know, even though I studied Spanish in high school and college. Like,
oh, but you needed to invest some energy.
I did,
in
and
out
I
what
liked
was going
that
on.
Challenge, and I liked that it. You know, I like that. You don't see that very often in most shows.
Yeah, and Bridget, interesting that this is a drama, but it's 30 minutes. I mean, it seems to me that dramas are usually an hour. Is that not right? And the comedies are, you know, the sitcoms are a half hour. That's kind of an interesting format, isn't it?
Right, it is. I mean, we are used to seeing these 30-minute sitcoms, and the 30-minute drama is a thing that we don't see too often, especially in these days with streaming. A lot of them don't even stick to the hour format. So, you know, that is an interesting thing. But I think it being sort of a short, concise show with characters that you can relate to as far as their storylines are kind of the vehicle for what some of the things that Jamila is talking about that help you relate to that story, even though they may be speaking in, or using terms you don't quite understand or making cultural references you don't get. It makes you want to look it up. And the fact that it's 30 minutes and digestible, I think, kind of helps that move along.
Yeah, and you can binge watch it in 3 hours instead of 6 hours.
So exactly. Great, exactly.
All right, we're going to take a little break and have some more Tube Talk, where we talk about what's the latest stuff on television. Bridget Armstrong is the producer of several Vox Media podcasts, including Vox.com's pop culture podcast called I Think You're Amazing, clearly a show I will never be invited on to be a guest. Jamila Krempel is a screenwriter and a digital producer here at WIPR. We'll have more talking about television when we come back. 410-662-8780. What are your favorite shows of the season? Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @midday WIPR. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. And welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. As I just told you, by the magic of digital audio tape, a reminder that our live coverage of primary night in Maryland does begin at 9 o'clock. And coming up tomorrow on the program, we'll sift through the results of tonight's primary with two longtime observers of the Maryland political landscape, Jane Miller, the lead investigative reporter at WBAL-TV, and Andy Green, the editorial page editor of the Baltimore Sun. They'll join me tomorrow, but the WIPR news team and a bunch of wonderful analysts, Jean Marbella from the Baltimore Sun, the political strategist Catalina Byrd, and from the University of Baltimore, John Willis, will join me tonight at 9 o'clock right here on 88.1 WIPR for primary night in Maryland. If you're just joining us today, it's an Election Day installment of Tube Talk with Midday's resident television mavens, Jamila Krempel and Bridget Armstrong. We'd love to hear your feelings about what's new and what's out there and what's old and still good. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, and to drop us a tweet @midday WIPR. So, Jamila, let's talk about Atlanta. Mm-hmm. This guy, Donald Glover, who is just everywhere.
Yes.
I mean, he's just everywhere. You can't, it's like, I remember Howard Stern 20 years ago used to call himself the king of all media. Mm. Step aside, Mr. Stern. It is now Mr. Glover.
He never made an album either. So.
Yeah, a whole bunch of stuff he has.
that I know of.
Glover is like a Trivial Pursuit question. Could be name one thing he hasn't done. I mean, it's amazing. Right. But this is, it's in its second season. We just talked about how it can be tough to sustain second season. How does it compare to the first?
Second season wrapped, I think, in May. I personally think that the second season was better than the first. I loved the first, but the second season, I think, did a lot more with character development. Instead of seeing, so there's about four main characters. For those who don't know, it takes place, obviously, in Atlanta. It follows a character named Alfred, also known as Paperboy. He's a rapper. His cousin Earn is his manager. They have a friend named Darius, who's my favorite character. And there's also Earn's girlfriend Van. So it sort of just follows them as they're navigating how to work through the music industry. But also this season focused a lot on the personal lives of the characters, especially around Alfred Paperboy. This season was called Robin Season, which refers to the lead up to the holiday season where a lot of robberies take place. But it's not just about that. I think it's sort of a metaphor for these characters, really the fear that they have of something being taken from them, whether it's from the music industry, from criminals, from fans. Everyone's trying to get a piece of them or something from them. So it focuses on that. But it also dealt with, I think, all of the characters in the show are African-American, mostly African-American male cast members. But it really showed sort of how they deal with depression, how they deal with, being the person that they want to be. Or trying to be versus what society expects from them. So dealt with a lot of heavy issues, but in really bizarre, absurd, really funny ways.
And Bridget, what'd you think? I mean, these are themes that we often don't see explored with black characters. I mean, like when we're talking about Vida with Mexican American characters, so oftentimes they're stereotyped. Now we're really getting to see dimensions of black men and black women, for that matter, that just really, I mean, just a few years ago were unheard of on anything you could watch on television.
I agree. I mean, I think we saw a lot of emotional range from Donald Glover's character, Earn, and Paperboy's character, especially with Paperboy dealing with fame, kind of like what Jamila was talking about, and having to deal with the responsibilities, but also the vulnerabilities that fame brings and people wanting to take from you and what it means to be a famous person or to be a person people recognize. And I think another thing that was really great about this episode, I mean, about this season, excuse me, is that we saw a lot of development of outside characters, not just Earn and Paperboy, who the storyline follows. We saw an entire episode centered around Darius and his interaction with a fictional character that was loosely based on Michael Jackson and also played by Donald Glover. Very strange episode, but really good.
Teddy Perkins.
The Teddy Perkins episode.
Make sure you
so
watch
we get
that.
We got to see that character. We also saw an episode that centered around Van. A couple of episodes that really centered around Van and her storyline. So I think that was another thing about this season. It wasn't just that we saw this development and how these black men deal with depression through these two characters. We saw it through the entire cast.
Let's listen to a clip. This is Atlanta. It's on FX.
Hey, sorry for being late, my man. Commode in my house backed up. My pit. Girlfriend and he had all the plungers.
It's all good, man. It's all good.
What was that?
What?
I'm sorry, did you say something?
Yeah, I was answering you, man.
Oh, no, I'm on the phone, man. Yeah, she said she didn't even trust me around rubber and wood. He had all the plungers. What type of petty person do like that? Yeah, absolutely. So what are we doing? My man, what are we doing?
Oh, I don't know what you're talking to me. I'm sorry. The usual.
No. Of course not. She don't be thinking about none of that. That's fine. She gonna get it though. You know what I'm saying? It's all good. When I get my income tax, I'm gonna open my own shop, or I'm gonna buy my own WNBA team. One of them.
Yo, baby.
Huh?
Can we?
Hey, man. Let me let you go. I got somebody sitting in the chair. Yeah, he's a little hostile. I'll let you go.
Talking in the barbershop. That's Atlanta on FX. Jamila, let's talk about one that's on BBC America. It's called Killing Eve.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you think of that one?
I really liked Killing Eve. I thought it took a little bit of time to sort of to build. This was really a fan favorite. It kind of took off by word of mouth, by social media. It centers around an assassin who's also a psychopath. She's a young female character. Her name is Villanelle. And Eve, who's played by Sandra Oh, which some people may know from Grey's Anatomy or the great movie Sideways. But these two women are on different sides of sort of the criminal and non-criminal worlds. But they, I won't give it away why they're drawn together, but they have this a bizarre, uncomfortable attraction to each other, and there's a cat and mouse game because of a reason that I won't give away. But it's really interesting. A lot of really sharp, snappy writing. A lot of interesting sort of character types that we're not used to seeing, especially with the female assassin. It's a really good show. I think people should check it out.
Yeah, and Bridget, our producer, Sienna Greaves, loved this one. She told me she thought it was a really good spin on the procedural drama. So here's BBC America taking a really standard form and evidently doing some pretty interesting things with it. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. Especially the character Villanelle. We have this sort of bad stereotypical villain, except she's not that. Like, she's this really unredeemable character, and she doesn't really follow the normal tropes of villains or women villains at that. She's very smart, she's funny, she's weird, and above all else, she's really mean. And so it's like you have a real villain here that you can just kind of love to hate. And I think Sandra Oh's performance is really great too. And yeah, it's really interesting that the BBC America channel, which doesn't get a lot of play, kind of has the standout show from this season that a lot of people are talking about.
Yeah, I mean, that's another unusual source. You just don't think about BBC America as that. You think about that as, you know, stuff about queens and kings and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Right. I don't think I've watched something on BBC since the show Absolutely Fabulous that came out in the 90s.
Oh, like, yeah. Just Fab.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? I remember that.
That was the last time I paid attention to that.
And of course, I mean, Kings and Queens still are pretty big on streaming services. I mean, The Crown is evidently
big show.
I mean, so Bridget, is The Crown worthy of its crown? I mean, it sounds like it has definitely, they're in their second season, right? And it sounds like they have definitely sustained interest. You see at least a lot of ads for them, you know, people, you know, for your consideration to get Emmys and stuff. What do you think? Has it held up? Do you ever watch it?
Well, I've tried to watch it. It is not my cup of tea. Like tea.
Good. Got it.
Good one. Y'all get it.
Pinkies up with that tea.
Yeah, right. It's not my, I don't particularly like the show, but it is a very well shot show. It's very pretty. I think fans of it, I think appreciate the historical accuracies. People who really follow the news of the royals kind of appreciate those storylines. But for me, I don't really like the show, but I think it's a well-made show.
Right. So, Jamila, what do you think? Have you seen The Crown?
I have not.
Yeah, not at all. So you've never even been interested in it. That's interesting. Well, I've seen a couple of episodes, and they're interesting, but it's a very it's a pace that you have to like buy into because it's slow.
Yeah, right. And those types of stories that are centered around, you know, the royal family or the past royal family, it just doesn't. That's not my cup of tea either.
I want to ask you, before we run out of time, I want to ask you, Jamila, about a guy, Wyatt Cenac, who used to be on The Daily Show and has done a couple of really terrific movies. Mm-hmm. He's got this thing called Problem Areas. I saw a promo for it, and I just assume this is a comedy with Wyatt Cenac, who's a very smart guy.
Yeah.
Have you seen it? And what's the deal with this? So yeah,
I've seen a couple episodes. He is he's a comedic writer. He was on he wrote for Jon Stewart's show. He's got a quite a strong resume, but you would think it's funny, and it's billed as a comedy and sort of a satire or take on different social issues. He wants to sort of educate people about these social issues. But the format is a little odd to me. It's like just the set alone. It looks like he's in like some weird mid-century modern bunker, like PBS bunker or something. It comes across as sort of like a infomercial or something. Like he's trying to educate you about different issues, but it's like in these bite-sized increments, and then he does these documentary style interviews, and I just don't know if he's the right messenger for this, but I will say the show has covered several different topics that I haven't seen elsewhere, especially on TV news. They did a segment devoted to uncovering sexual violence committed by police officers. That's not a story that you hear very often. They've done things on, you know, sort of student loans and on women being left out of clinical trials. Like, this is content that you're not seeing very often, but I just don't know the delivery and the messenger if it really works.
See, because maybe we're all just assuming that that's what Wyatt Cenac is all about. He's all about funny. He's all about, you know, humor. And he's probably saying, look, I got other stuff I want to say.
But he's not very dynamic as a host. So it's hard to sort of give him that opportunity.
Interesting.
But people can decide for themselves.
Jemila Krempel and Bridget Armstrong are our Tube Talkers. We're here talking Tube on Midday. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWIPR. I'm Tom Hall. On email, Michael writes in Posse on FX TV. Or is it Pose?
Pose.
Okay. Mm-hmm. There's one S. I wasn't quite sure if that was the right word. Pose, FX TV, is a largely gay, largely people of color cast. It focuses on the house culture in the 1980s in New York City. And so far, it seems to be developing solid characters and storylines, according to Michael. He also says that the 30-minute format for dramas seems to be a trend on the pay-per-view networks. And I'm impressed with Insecure on HBO and have hopes for Vita. Stars also had a forgettable drama about a young woman in New York City's restaurant culture. And some of these programs choose to replace content for extended sex scenes. It sometimes works on an hour-long program, but not in a limited time of 30 minutes on the show. Now, you guys both, speaking of Insecure on HBO, you guys are big fans of Issa Rae.
Big fans. It's coming back August 12th.
August 12th, yeah. Yep. So they're really spacing them out on that one. I mean, a lot of them do, right? I mean, when did the last one end?
Oh, it must have been...
It's been a long wait, it seems.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Yeah.
It was still on the last time, I think, we spoke.
Yeah, so
but
that was like
Insecure
the first of the year.
Has a large, not a large cast, but they've got... You know, a large writer's room. They've the production values. It's HBO, so I think they need time. I mean, they do the show right, so I think they want to make sure they get it right and not rush it.
Yeah. So, Bridget, I have to ask you about Handmaid's Tale on Hulu.
Yes.
Is it Handmaid's or Handmaiden?
The Handmaid's Tale. Yes,
Handmaid's Tale.
Yes.
Yeah.
And my weekly torture session that I watch. It is a hard show to watch. It is also back for a second season. It's a hard show to watch on purpose. Obviously, the premise is a dystopian future culture based on America, where America has fallen, and this religious fundamentalist group that kidnaps women and basically rapes them to have children, because the society, for some whatever reason, for medical reasons, people are not able to have children anymore. So it's this dystopian future that is centered on this character played by Elizabeth Moss. The character's name is June, or Offred. That's her Gilead. That's the new fundamentalist country. That's her Gilead name. So we see this woman kind of have these moments, these really gripping moments where you have like hope that she might get out throughout this whole season. And, you know, I won't give it away for those who have not caught up, but it's very much an emotional roller coaster of a show. I will say, while I think the show is still really good, one of the things that stands out now, the show decided in the books that this is based on, the book deals with race by saying that this society has cast black people out to another place. So they don't deal with race a lot in the book. But on the show, they made the conscious decision, because they wanted to have a diverse cast, to leave that part out. And so what we have is a lot of characters of color, a lot of LGBT characters, and not a lot of reckoning with what that means, especially for the characters of color. It's really hard to believe that this dystopian American future would not include racism, but this show does not include racism. And that has become more glaring in the second season. So that would be my biggest criticism of it. But overall, the story is just as scary as it was the first season.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, like, sexism clearly is what this show is all about.
Right.
But it's as if sexism can happen in a vacuum with without the concurrent racism. Yeah.
Right. Extreme misogyny, extreme sexism, extreme rape culture, but somehow we all got over racism in between the time of society falling and us in this time in the show, which doesn't make sense.
How about one on the OWN network? That's Oprah Winfrey's network, Jemila, called Love Is. What's that one about?
Love is about centers around two main characters. They are both young Black creatives. Nuri is the female character. Yasir is the male character. She works in the. It's also set in the 90s in Los Angeles. She is a writer for a fictional comedy called Marvin, but is very not so loosely based on the real comedy Martin. Even the set looks the same. So she's trying to sort of gain recognition as a writer, and she's pretty successful. So she's successful. She has a house. She's got, you know, all these sort of things that say you're successful: the house, the car, the clothes, all those things. But she doesn't have love. She doesn't really make time for love. And she has a very specific type in mind that she will date. And all of a sudden, this guy comes out of nowhere who's not her type, but she has this attraction to him. And it's based off of the real life love story of the showrunner Mara Brock Akil and her husband, who are kind of heavyweights in the TV scene themselves. So it's based off of their real life love story. The first episode premiered last week, last Tuesday. The second episode premieres tonight. So we'll see. I liked it. It's light. It's sweet. I'll continue watching it.
Yeah, and Bridget, you over at Vox, you all did a podcast with this husband and wife producing writing team. They've got a bunch of hits in their quiver. I mean, they've been successful in a number of ways. What did they tell you about how they work together?
So we actually talked to just Salim Akil, who is Mara Brock Akil's husband. He's actually the showrunner for that show we mentioned before, the Black superhero show, Black Lightning. And he talked about, because they've done shows together, he's actually a producer on Love Is, where Mara Brock Akil is the showrunner. But they've done shows like Girlfriends, The Game, Being Mary Jane. They've produced Soul Food, the series, a lot of shows, and they've been in the game for a while. And so he talked about them having to work together and basically not bringing work home, and also respecting their partner's opinions, but also respecting the boundaries. So knowing that you have your partner who will tell you the truth when you need the truth, but also being able to say, hey, Love is Mara's show and she's in charge. So what decisions she makes, I, as her husband and producer, you know, should back her up when she says that that's what she wants to go with. So it's just a really good conversation, or that part of the conversation, and talking about balancing this, because they've obviously been married, I think, for about 20 years now. They've had shows on since the 90s, so something seems to be working for them. And he really talked about balancing that home life and also their work life.
Yeah, that's interesting, because it can be tough. I mean, that is obviously, you know, rife with the potential for difficulty if you're spending that much time together. And
right.
All right, speaking of time, that's all the time we have to spend together. So Bridget Armstrong, Jemila Krempel, always good to see you guys, and thank you so much. And we'll keep in touch as you guys keep watching.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, thanks for having us.
Jemila Krempel is a screenwriter and the digital producer here at WIPR. Bridget Armstrong is the producer of the Vox.com pop culture podcast, I Think You're Interesting. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, the Afro Check-In. Perry Green is the sports editor at the Afro newspaper. He's going to join me to talk about the controversy surrounding the St. Francis Academy football team. I'm Tom Hall. It's midday. Stay with us.